And you know, whether you talk about it in the press conference too, is there, of course, you're inspired by the original book, but also, you know, London National Theatre is a huge hit of this material, documentary. So that you really been inspired by the theatre production.
Well,
and did you see that?
I never saw it. I was living in America when the National Theatre production was on the first time. And then it went up a second time, but by that time I was about to direct it, to adapt the book actually, and I didn't want to see it, I didn't want to be influenced by it, although I've heard, you know, wonderful things about it. I didn't want to have the pictures from that production in my mind.
So I'd love to know, in which state of mind are you right now? Are you stressed? Are you, I don't know, insulting yourself? I'm mad, what did I do? That was too much?
No, just to set it in context, my wife is pregnant and we're having a baby in 5 days.
No.
So, yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
That's stressing.
So, on top of all of this stuff, there is the excitement and kind of an anxiety of having our first baby. So, no, I'm not kicking myself for anything that I did or didn't do. So that's a good feeling. I'm quite tired because this is much harder than the average film. Even if it were the average kind of film, it would be 5 times bigger or so. But then you've got all the visual effects, and I'm not used to... I mean, editing a movie is usually a very kind of peaceful process for me. You know, you go in, you do an 8-hour day, banker's hours, you go home. But with this, that you have to review 2 or 3 hours worth of visual effects footage in various stages. There's shot, you know, XO32... which is in the third stage of 10, and you know, you have to talk people through every single bit.
Sounds like our Cannes Festival.
Yeah, I know. Actually, this must be quite similar in terms of its exhaustingness. Yeah.
It's on the opposite, relaxing and in a franchise is what everybody wants. Apparently now, in Hollywood actors and directors, something that can potentially be a franchise like that.
Sure. I think. Obviously, well, there's a maybe pernicious trend towards sequels being the only guarantee in Hollywood. Unfortunately, the first of a series doesn't get you that you know, that additional boost that you want. And although the books are very highly regarded, very well known in England especially, they don't have the immediate kind of saturation that say Lord of the Rings did or Narnia. So we really have, although it is kind of a franchise and it will work as such if people like it as much as we would like, we have to work especially hard to garner the kind of attention that this film will need.
It looks great.
Oh, thanks. Oh, good.
How about the casting of Daniel? I mean, wasn't Paul Bettany originally on the consideration?
Actually, there were a few people on the consideration. I didn't know if we were ever going to be able to get Daniel because of the Bond commitments, and it took incredible logistical kind of gymnastics to be able to shoot it in between when he was going to Japan for the premiere of Bond, and then get him back, and we have a beard at the right time for the right scene, and, you know, all this kind of crazy stuff. So he's perfect in the part. He loves the books. He's very deeply committed to that. We're very lucky that we could work that all out. I think there are only a few actors in his kind of category in terms of the real kind of sheer charisma and the acting ability, and some of the other people who were kind of in the pool of people being considered, which is Eric Bana and Paul Bettany, also have that same kind of feeling. And by the way, you know, Daniel was cast before Bond came out. It makes us look very smart now, but he didn't know that it was going to be the biggest, you know, thing ever. It could have been a terrible disappointment as far as we know.
It's kind of intriguing having
the same star. Yeah. It's a bit weird, yeah. Well, actually, another strange thing is that Daniel Craig and Nicole Kidman are in a film which will be coming out. I don't know if they come out before us or after us, actually. So there are these kind of weird overlapping bits. But actually, Ava was the first person in my mind, the first person I cast in my mind. For that character, I just saw her as that. So she was actually the first bit of casting that I had straightened out in my head.
Did you know Daniel before? When did you cast him in your head?
I didn't. I didn't know. I didn't meet him until after we put out an offer, and I was able to speak to him on the phone. And it's been good. He's in a very kind of no nonsense, very instinctive, but terribly prepared. And very, just very committed to the books. I won't say because you know, ask him, but certainly someone who loves books as much as I do. Which is great.
Yes,
speaking
about the books, a few years ago when you were doing interviews for About a Boy, I remember coming in your hotel room, and it was either you or your brother was reading Schopenhauer.
Neither of us. We just had it sitting around.
unless you were showing up, so apparently you're into heavy philosophical stuff. Is that in any way in this book, or should we regard it just as kid stuff with just a little bit extra?
No, I think there's a lot extra. I think that the books have sort of. He synthesizes a number of ideas from different areas, from philosophy, theology, mythology, all kinds of areas, and he does it so beautifully. The conflation is such a perfect blend, which is one of the most appealing things about this. And it's very difficult to bring that kind of stuff to film because it's not as much of a verbal medium, obviously, as a novel, and so a lot of the message that we're conveying is visual in nature. I've always been, kind of. If there's one thing in my life I don't have enough time for, it's reading books. It's a really important thing in my life, and I've been missing out on it through this whole process. And I still try to keep reading, in spite of the lack of time. It's what's brought me to my best experiences as a filmmaker, in the case of About a Boy and in this one.
It's like you choose to adapt the book into a screenplay itself. You actually have, why did you choose to adapt it by yourself at all? Was it that screenwriter before?
Yeah. Newline wasn't happy with Tom Stoppard's screenplay. To be completely honest with you, much like I didn't see the National Theatre stage production, I didn't read Sir Tom's screenplay until later. So I can't speak as to what their feelings were about it. As a director, one likes to have as much precision and control, although that's a negative word in some ways, control over what is going to hit the screen. So I just naturally tend to write my own stuff, and also it's something that I think I'm pretty good at, which is to adapt. It's a very specialized kind of screenwriting, to adapt novels to the screen. It's more like translation than actual creative writing in many ways. So the key was to hone it in such a way that it was not only that it represented the themes and the story and everything, but that it was filmable, that it was actually possible to do it, because all of these things come with a big price tag. And why I did it in Svalbard, when New Line decided to hire me, I thought, well, okay, half of this book is set in the Arctic, and I don't like cold weather. I hate it. I like sunshine, and I like spring, and trees and flowers. And so I thought, well, that's going to be a problem if I'm going to write about all these harsh Arctic settings. It's going to seem like I don't know what I'm talking about. So I thought, all right, well, I'll see if you can go to the Arctic. And I went on the internet, and there was some ship called the Nordlicht, which was which does trips around Svalbard. And there was one berth, one seat available on this ship, which carried 20 people. I was the only American on board, which made for interesting conversations early in the Bush White House era. And so I found myself there, and I plugged my my laptop into the ship's power supply the first day, and it fried my laptop instantly. I thought, well, I don't know how I'm going to do this, but of course then I had a notebook and pen, so I went back to writing a screenplay longhand, which I hadn't done in a long time. And while all the people on board were going off on these great kind of expeditions and hiking up glaciers and stuff, which I didn't really want to do anyway, I would say, I've got to work. I'd stay behind here in the saloon of the ship and write. And actually, as a little tribute to that trip, the boat that the Egyptians, the kind of some of the good guys, take up to the north, it's called the Nordlicht in the movie.
Fantasy stories are very important now because, you know, last year at the Cannes Film Festival, Mexican director Pan's Arrivals, it's very emotional.
Yeah.
Mm. It's really related to the real human life. So this one also maybe like that. So we couldn't ignore it, you know, fantasy stories. It really appealed to maybe children or any other adults.
That's a very beautiful film, I think, Pan's Labyrinth. And like this one, it deals with some very difficult issues and often harsh subject matter, and takes children and their point of view seriously. And also, I mean, I think if you look at kind of Miyazaki's work, he cares in the same way about the kind of feelings of children in the kind of context of this their imaginative world, and it's. You know, it's an old tradition to view a movie through the eyes of a child, and it's certainly nothing new. The new thing is being able to depict these extraordinary worlds with such kind of fidelity to what your intention was in the first place.
Yeah, what about like the girls, rather than boys, as they go adventures? So that's really
very
special meaning.
To me, not really. I mean, it's a person. She happens to be a girl in the book. I think that. She's kind of an underdog, and her being a little girl makes her doubly an underdog. Definitely the point is not to make kind of a girl power movie or anything like that. I don't really care. I do, you know, it's a great story. Pullman happened to write it that way, so I'm not just trying to make any kind of feminist fable or anything. And I think the boys will be equally. There's a lot of stuff for a lot of people in this movie. It's gigantic, and so you know. There are polar bears fighting each other, and you know, people shooting one another. If you're a boy, I'm being a bit glib, actually, though, because I don't think children necessarily care unless they're conditioned by the marketing environment. Whether something is about a boy or a girl, you know, everyone just wants a good story.
Can you talk about your visual inspiration for this movie? Is there another movie aside from what you read in the book?
Yes. Okay. Well, the visual inspiration there's a few. There's Pre-Raphaelite painting and Victorian narrative painting. So as opposed to, and I'm, this is going to sound pretentious, but I'll just do it anyway. As you know, movies are going in a very stylized direction nowadays. So if you look at 300, the film stock, or at least, you know, digital media is put through film stock is being pushed as far as it can be until you achieve a deeply, deeply stylized end result. For me, I wanted to shoot in such a way that it seemed like a movie made in an actual place with actual film stock. It just happened to be a place that we've never quite seen before. So in a way, I'm actually going away from a certain trend in filmmaking. In terms of pictures, I wanted it to be kind of classically composed, as it were, which, and to me, the great epic filmmakers, and I'm not by any stretch of imagination comparing myself to them, saying these are movies that I love, are, you know, David Lean and Kurosawa, because they were both able to combine these kind of vast canvases and wide-angle lens photography with very close and intimate stuff. So, ideally, if I could combine that sort of stuff with the amazing kinds of things that George Lucas or Peter Jackson does, that would be what I was aiming for, but it's not for me to say.
Why do you think that stories about the parallel worlds from Harry Potter to The Matrix are so popular?
I think because we live in parallel worlds, not only, well, first of all, not only is the idea in physics rather appealing and intriguing, but also potentially true that there are, 11 dimensions and string theory and all this kind of great stuff which is in the books, and probably don't have time to talk about it in the movie, but also because everyone would like to imagine things as they might be. And I think we live in a parallel world that took a completely different fork in the road on 9/11, 2001. Suddenly it was a movie. There was this great headline in The Onion, which is a satirical paper in America, which is Americans wake up to find themselves in a Jerry Bruckheimer movie. It was like, suddenly the unimaginable happened and everything was going to be different. But you could easily imagine that not having happened or the plot being foiled and then we'd be living quite an entirely different life. And I think that chance playing itself out and decisions playing themselves out, each one of those chance events and decisions forming another universe of its own is a fascinating idea, which we're constantly drawn to.
Could you tell us a little bit about what exactly is real and what exactly is computer made? There is this mixture of sci-fi and Jules Verne, 1900.
What's
real?
Let me see. Sometimes I can't tell myself is the first thing, because every once in a while, and the thing is to not just do the things that are jumping out at you, but do the backgrounds in such a way that on a good day I can't tell that building was never there when we shot. And I've made that mistake a few times, which feels really good. You see, you look at the background and say, oh, there's something odd about this. And that building that's there in the background, out of focus, it's not shouting out, hey, look at me, I'm a special effect. It's just there. And that's obviously, the demons and the bear, those are entirely CGI. Based on life, based on, real fur, real textures. We have some amazing conflations where, for instance, the background of scenes which we shot on stage with Dakota in the north, they were shot with green screen, so the backgrounds are recreated, but the textures are all from ice in Svalbard. So you take the photography that you've done in Svalbard and lay it over an architecture that is made on a computer, for instance.
Thank you very much.
The German ice bear, where the world is captured.